now global investors have something else to worry about, a political crisis in one of the Eurozone's biggest economies. But the political crisis isn't just hurting banks. The inability of Italy's new prime minister to put together a government could force another election only 4 months after the last vote. And there's fear the next election could pull Italy, the Eurozone's third largest economy, further away, if not out, of the Euro.
It's a joke. That's how TV star Roseanne characterized her tweet, saying former Obama aide Valerie Jarrett looked like if, quote, Muslim Brotherhood and Planet of the Apes had a baby. But that so-called joke got her hit TV show canceled. ABC releasing a statement hours later that, quote, Roseanne's Twitter statement is abhorrent, repugnant, and inconsistent with our values, and we have decided to cancel her show.
Violent video games have long been both popular and controversial, but a new game is provoking a new level of outrage. It's called Active Shooter, and it simulates a school shooting. Gamers can choose between playing the active shooter or the SWAT team, first responders. It was developed by Revived Games and published by a company called Acid, which plans to sell the game for $5 to $10 on video game platform Steam.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's May 30th. And it's 5:10 in the morning. Happy you're here with us for another edition of The Opening Bell and another business day getting underway. On the broadcast today, we're going to take a dive into homelessness on college campuses, and we'll talk about some of the efforts that are being undertaken to dive into that and help homeless students on college campuses. A little bit later in the broadcast, a little bit of news about marijuana. Several countries, including Canada and Europe, talk about legalizing marijuana. What's the difference between what they're doing and what's happening in the United States? We'll talk about that coming up at 5:40 this morning here on The Opening Bell. But first, on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, stocks have skidded in Asia today as Italy heads for another round of elections. And investors are worrying that could become a referendum on whether or not it will stay in the Eurozone. Japan's Nikkei dropped almost 1.5%. South Korea's index down 2%. Hong Kong's index down about 1.5%. The Shanghai Composite fell 1.5%. Shares also fell in Southeast Asia and in Taiwan. Rest of the world markets this morning in Europe, markets are generally mixed, with the FTSE up just a fraction, the DAX up just a fraction, the CAC is lower. After a nearly 390-point drop yesterday, Dow futures are up 110 points this morning, trying to gain a little of that ground back. NASDAQ and S&P futures are higher as well. Crude oil is trading at $67.01 a barrel, which is up about 28 cents. A couple of stories we're watching for you. The Federal Reserve preparing to ease a rule aimed at diffusing the kind of risk-taking on Wall Street that helped trigger the 2008 financial meltdown. The Volcker Rule, crafted by regulators 4.5 years ago, changed the way the biggest U.S. banks do business. It bars banks trading risky trading bets for their own profit with depositors' money. The rule, a key plank of the landmark Dodd-Frank financial regulation law, aimed at reducing the likelihood of another crisis and taxpayer bailout of banks. The move is the latest effort by the Trump administration to loosen restraints on banks. President Trump has blamed Dodd-Frank for constraining economic growth. The Fed meeting today to discuss possible changes in the Volcker Rule. China's government is accusing the Trump administration of hurting its credibility by acting erratically on trade and has vowed to fight back if Washington goes ahead with a tariff hike. Foreign Ministry spokesman complaining this morning that the U.S. decision to renew a threat to raise duties on $50 billion worth of Chinese goods conflicts with an agreement in mid-May between the two countries aimed at settling that dispute. College campuses are not immune to homelessness. We've talked before about homelessness in schools, in public schools, grade schools and middle schools, but it's also a problem on college campuses. And we want to bring in Charles Levesque this morning. He's the president, executive director at DePaul USA. And Chuck, good morning. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thank you very much.
We got your letter on this and wanted to get back to you as quick as possible because it's one of those stories that I don't think a lot of people realize. Tell us about homelessness on college campuses. How significant is it?
Well, Steve, it's a very significant problem, and it's one that's really just beginning to come to light. So here in the office, we refer to two studies, one done by HUD, the Housing and Urban Development Department, that found at least 58,000 college and university students in this country are homeless. And then recently, the University of Wisconsin completed a study, and they surveyed 43,000 students across the country, and they found that 9% of the four-year students self-reported being homeless, and 12% of the community college students reported that they were homeless.
Immediately, I think people will say, hey, wait a second, how is this possible? If they can afford to go to college, how are they homeless?
Right. I think that's exactly the question people ask. And I think the answer is that people can sometimes afford tuition, but they can't afford the living costs. And I think some universities and financial aid packages underestimate the cost of what it takes to live and survive at a university beyond just the room, board, and fees. Also, we see here at DePaul USA students who go through problems. You know, their families break up because of economic issues, or they suffer from mental health problems. So there are a variety of ways that you end up without housing.
How does this impact the student life for those students that are homeless? I would imagine it's pretty difficult to keep focus on grades.
It is, and students who are homeless or even food insecure perform more poorly than their peers who are stable. And here at DePaul USA, we run a program called the DOCS program, where we've actually rented a rectory from the Archdiocese of Chicago, and we put five formerly homeless DePaul University students into this house. And what we saw immediately in the first quarter that they were in residence was that their grades improved, so they do much better. They were also staying in school. We housed 13 people over the course of the past year, and only one dropped out of the university. So that's a 93% retention rate. 57% of college students in this country graduate. They complete. So we're working with a vulnerable population, but they're staying in school. And Steve, I would also say that it's really inspiring to work with these students, because they understand that the university, that DePaul University, where they're going to school, is a social escalator that will take them into the middle class. So they're committed to their education. They want to find a way to complete it.
Talk to us a little bit more about the DACS Host Home Program. How does it work, and is this a model for other college campuses, perhaps?
I believe it is a model. We began this program 2.5 years ago. We found that there were students at DePaul University who were homeless or housing insecure, and we first started matching them with families who very generously and graciously opened their homes and said, yeah, I'll take a student for a quarter. And that worked well, but Steve, it's hard both to find families that want to do this or can do this, and it's also hard to find students who are willing to do it, because it's an imposition and they don't want to impose on another family. So we did it and it worked and we learned, but then someone gave us an apartment that they were not using. We put a student in there, and this was a student who had lived on the L, had slept on the bench in front of the university library at DePaul, and he absolutely thrived when he had this apartment. And a light went off in our heads, and we determined we had to find a place for students to live independently and on their own. So we rented this rectory in Pilsen, and we put the students in there. We're now launching a capital campaign to buy a house where we can put 4 or 5 more students, and then our goal is to get the data from this and use it to even buy a larger building where we can house maybe up to 20 students, and it could be a collaborative effort between a number of universities. All we're doing really is acting as a very benevolent landlord. So we're willing to take a loss on the building. Students will pay $150 for a room. We require them to work. And then we'll pay the rest of the rent. And I just go out and I raise the rent with my team here by going to foundations and individuals to pay the difference.
Chuck, hang on. We're going to continue our conversation with Chuck Levesque. He's the president and executive director at DePaul USA.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. With the Trump administration's decision to move forward with billions of dollars in tariffs against China, new questions about this weekend's trade talks in Beijing. Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross is supposed to be there Saturday, but the Wall Street Journal now says there is a chance that trip could be canceled. Sears may be ready to cut a deal. The hedge fund controlled by Sears CEO Edward Lampert says it has received several inquiries from potential partners. Fast food chains looking to cash in on Americans' hunger for better burgers. McDonald's sales are up, and analysts say that's due in part to a new line of premium burgers and sandwiches. Jack in the Box has also jumped on, introducing a ribeye burger with a red wine glaze late last year. Michelle Franz in ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. We're on this morning with Chuck Levesque. He's the president and executive director at DePaul USA. We're talking about college campus homelessness. Chuck, you know, I'm kind of curious. We've been talking a lot on this program in the past about the student loan indebtedness of kids today, the cost of college, too. Do those things play into homelessness among students?
I think they do. I think particularly as students leave the university, their debt limits their options and what they can do. I just saw data recently that the average cost of a public four-year university, that's for tuition, board fees, is $17,000. And for a private four-year university, it's $43,000. So part of what we're trying to do with our program is reduce student indebtedness because we're providing housing at a reduced cost. And we feel that, you know, being able to graduate with limited debt is a gateway to independence. And I think the key thing about homelessness work, and DePaul USA doesn't just work with homeless students. That's our focus here in Chicago. But we're a national organization that works in six states with, you know, homeless people. We have clinics and we have permanent housing, temporary housing. What you want to do is move people where possible to independence. And that's the beauty of this program, I think, in that we can bend the trajectory of these kids' lives by getting them through college. And if they get out of college, they can pursue their professional dreams. They can become engaged community citizens. They can have the life that they've dreamed of. So that's what we're trying to do here.
I know you guys are trying to make a difference and solve this problem. Are there other solutions that we're maybe not seeing here that could be put in place?
I think there's lots of innovations that are bubbling up at universities and colleges across the country. Closely related to the issue of homelessness is hunger. Now universities are creating food pantries, which seems unbelievable to me, but it's meeting a need. Lots of students are food insecure. That means they don't have enough to eat or they're eating less than they should be eating. So these kinds of supports, I think better counseling of students and families regarding financial aid and what it entails and what it pays for is important. And I think another crucial element and something that the private sector can get involved in as well as nonprofits is just providing more affordable accommodations or housing. This isn't just about students, but I read something recently that of all the families, 100 families that might qualify for affordable housing, there are only 33 to 35 units available. So there's just a paucity of affordable housing, not just for students, but for all families. So I think that's really where we have to focus.
You mentioned that part of your job is to go out and raise money to help solve this problem. Lots of corporate leaders perhaps listening to this program this morning. What would your message to them be?
My message would be, come join us in this movement. We're helping to create a class of people that will work for your companies and make you increasingly profitable and successful. And you can do that in a number of ways. If you're personally moved by this call to action and want to host a student, I'll give a phone number out. You can call and we can set up an interview. But we're also having a big fundraiser on June 5th at the Cordelieu Commons on DePaul's campus here in Lincoln Park. And Dr. Gabriel Esteban, the president of the university, is our honorary chair. And we have the Peabody Award-winning journalist Darlene Hill as our MC, and very specially Taylor Bennett, a hip-hop artist from here in Chicago and a philanthropist, will be performing. And our goal, Steve, is to raise money for the program we have, but also to raise the last $100,000 we need to buy the second Docs house so we can open that this fall. So the number to call if you're interested in any of these things is area code 312-362-8873. So that's area 312-362-8873. Or go to our website, give.depauluSA.org/DocsHouseCampaign. And that's Docs, D-A-X.
And we will post this information with the podcast of the show later this morning. Before we let you go, Chuck, I'm guessing, too, there may be people who know homeless students or even some homeless students listening, too. The message to them is that it's all hope is not gone.
Absolutely. And there's a lot of shame associated with this issue. And it took a while for us to get our first students to come forward. But there are people who want to help. DePaul University has been a tremendous partner with us in this program. Faculty members have hosted students. Faculty members have bought clothing for students so they can go to interviews. It's just been wonderful to see the university live out its Vincentian values and come forward to help students. So there's hope.
Where again can we find more information about DePaul USA?
Just Google DePaulUSA.org, and you'll find out about our organization. We're headquartered here in Chicago, and we're working to end homelessness in 6 states across the country right now.
All right. Well, Chuck, we appreciate you reaching out to us and being with us this morning.
Thank you so much for the opportunity, Steve.
Chuck Levesque is the president and executive director at DePaul USA.
Hi, this is Jim Dahlke with today's Inno Minute on WGN Radio, a rundown of all the Chicago innovation and tech news you need to know, delivered by ChicagoInno.com. A new app wants to make Chicago's food pantries more efficient and help them communicate better with each other and share excess inventory. Provision is an app that digitizes a food pantry's inventory and allows it to communicate with others nearby. With the app, users can look up item details such as expiration date and quantity, as well as communicate with other pantries directly. Millions of Facebook users in Illinois are being notified that they could be involved in a class action lawsuit against the social network for use of its facial tagging feature. The lawsuit, filed in 2014, alleges that Facebook violated Illinois' Biometric Information Privacy Act by not getting written consent from users before creating templates of their faces from photos. And it looks like Motorola may release a 5G Moto mod that adds an antenna to the back of the phone for faster speeds. The device would still need a network that supports 5G in order to work, as 5G has yet to be available by carriers in most areas. That's today's Inno Minute from WGN Radio. Learn more at ChicagoInno.com. Sign up for The Beat, our daily email newsletter.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning again, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here for our Wednesday edition of The Opening Bell. We thought we would discuss marijuana in this segment. The U.S. Considering, some states have already done, Canada already considering as well, legalization of marijuana. Dr. Antoine Kanamugari is with us this morning, the author of 21 Unspoken Truths About Marijuana. Doctor, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you. Why did you write this book?
This book has been published since April. It's the 21 Unspoken Truth has been published since the month of April, end of March, and I wrote this book. And this book has been inspired by the questions from friends, family, patients, colleagues who are all wondering what marijuana can do. Many people have unanswered questions about this substance. Is it dangerous? Does it have any potential health risk? So this is really a book inspired by the questions from people.
As the many of the states and even countries move toward legalization of marijuana, do you think that's happening quicker than it should, or are people moving along with deliberation, the right kind of deliberation here?
Yeah. Actually, if I take the Canadian context, the present government has promised to legalize marijuana before the elections, so they are following up on the promise, on their electoral promise. But the experts especially the provincial psychiatric associations, the federal psychiatric associations, all agree that it's moving faster than it should. For example, the Canadian Psychiatric Association or Quebec Psychiatric Associations find that the people are not really well prepared fully, especially in terms of understanding that marijuana is not completely harmless. While it may be less dangerous than many other drugs, but it still have its own risk. And the associations of experts find that people have not grasped this message well enough before the legalization. And the government is doing what it can to prepare the people about about this law, or the Cannabis Act, as they call it here in Canada. But as I said, the experts agree that it should maybe have been prepared more.
Yeah, it seems that a lot of the discussion, at least that's happening in some states here in the U.S. about this, is from a tax standpoint. So people are looking at the dollar signs rather than the research into marijuana. What would you say are the biggest concerns about the health effects of marijuana?
Yeah. As I said in my book, The 21 Unspoken Truths About Marijuana, I try to explain in very simple terms, in terms that anyone who can read can understand. I usually consider my book as a road sign. The road sign has to be concise, has to be simple, has to be easy to understand for everyone. So my book is really that simple. So any student from high school can understand it, a student from somebody who just learned how to read and write can take the book and understand it quickly. So it's a book for everyone. And I detailed in simple terms the health effects of cannabis. For example, a lot of people do not know that cannabis can cause can turn into addiction. Many people do not know that cannabis can result in psychosis or can trigger psychosis for vulnerable people. A lot of people are wondering, is cannabis can cannabis result in depression or increasing anxiety? Does cannabis treat, is cannabis good for my sleep long term? So I answer in simple terms this health risk that can be associated with marijuana. Again, it's not everyone who's going to have this health risk or this potential risk associated with marijuana. But we know that about 11% of people who use cannabis, that's one person out of nine, can fall into addiction. And when we talk about teenagers and young adults, this can be even higher. The risk of falling into addiction can go up to 17%. So yes, it's not the most dangerous drug in the world, but it has its potential risk when it comes to health. So this is the message that that needs to be explained to people. This is why I took this initiative, really out of love, out of care for my fellow men and women. That it's out of that desire, that passion to share, that I wrote this book. It's non-judgmental at all. It's completely neutral in terms of explaining the potential risk that can be associated with marijuana, so that whichever choice somebody takes, at least they know they are making a well-informed and educated choice to protect their health, their brain, to protect our young people's brain, and to lovingly help free those who might already be oppressed by the burden of addiction.
Yeah, we should tell folks that you're a medical doctor in Canada, and you specialize in psychiatry, so that's why I'm going to ask the next question about the psychosis part of this, and also the impact marijuana might have on social relationships. I guess people sometimes compare all of this discussion to, well, we legalized alcohol. Are there comparisons between the two in terms of psychosis and also social relationships?
Yeah, actually, these are two different substances. To start with, marijuana is going to act on receptors in your brain that are completely different from the receptors on which alcohol is going to act. So they are not going to trigger the exact same effect. But in terms of social relationships, for example, in terms of motivation, it's going to be similar. It's going to be similar in terms that when somebody especially falls into addiction of anything, alcohol, marijuana, or or other substance, there is what we call the amotivational syndrome. This is a syndrome that is common to all people who are going through this burden of addiction on anything. So this amotivational syndrome can be mistaken with depression, but it's not the same thing. It's a lack of motivation, a lack of ambition, neglect of priorities, neglecting cornerstones. So this is a syndrome that is common to alcohol addiction, marijuana addiction, cocaine, or other addictions. But in terms of psychosis, cannabis is going to increase the risk of psychosis greatly. There are studies that show that the increase in the increase of psychosis can be even by like 40% for occasional users. But this does not mean that the risk of psychosis is going to be 40%, because the risk of psychosis is about 3% in general population. So you increase by 40% of that 3%. So the risk can go up to 4 or 5%, the risk of psychosis. But for very heavy users, the risk can increase even higher than that. So it's not something we can take it lightly. So that's why we need to really explain to the people that there is a risk, especially for those people with other risk factors about psychosis. For example, background with a psychotic problem in the family, or somebody who has had already a psychosis, or somebody who's had depression or anxiety or other mental health issues, or who's been already addicted to something else. So this is a very important to understand before they make the choice. So again, in my book, I do not dictate any choice to anyone, but at least I really want to give the understanding of the substance, so that whichever choice somebody makes, at least they are making a well-informed choice.
Doctor, we're going to have to cut it there. We appreciate you sharing this with us this morning. We'll tell people how to get the book, and we appreciate your time this morning.
Yes, you can find the book on Amazon.com. It's in the bookstore in the area. You can check if it's available in the bookstore. Other than that, thank you very much for having me. In my book, I would like to emphasize that if you are under 25, you especially need to read this book, because I emphasize that aspect of age and the brain, the maturing of the brain under 25 can be even more dangerous for somebody to take cannabis.
The book, again, is 21 Unspoken Truths About Marijuana. Dr. Antoine Kanamagere with us this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk, Dow futures are up 137 points. NASDAQ futures are up about 25. S&P futures up 13. Let's get a look at agriculture and commodities now. Good morning, Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve. The Memorial Day holiday delayed government reports by one day, but yesterday afternoon, we received the first condition report for the corn crop across the country. It's off to a pretty good start. The national average on good to excellent, 79%. In Illinois, 83% of the corn crop rated good to excellent. In Indiana, 78%. And in Iowa, 82% of the crop rated good to excellent. Corn planting pretty well complete. Taking a look at soybean acreage planted, we now have 63% of the nation's soybean acres planted. In Illinois, 90%, Indiana, 87%, and Iowa reporting 81% of the soybean acres planted. Yesterday, we saw the hog market touch a five-week high on technical buying. And at the end of the day yesterday, the July lean hog contract traded at $78.85 a hundredweight, up $1.22. On the other hand, June live cattle futures were down $1.42 in yesterday's trade. And the grain market yesterday, well, we saw corn futures down nearly 2% with the front contract dropping below $4 a bushel. And part of that, again, trade tensions between the U.S. and China. Wheat turned lower after climbing to multi-month highs. Soybeans also ended the day lower. You have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. And now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, May 30th. In today's economic reports, payroll processor ADP will report on how many jobs private employers added in May. The Commerce Department will report on the first quarter gross domestic product. The Federal Reserve releases its beige book. The Mortgage Bankers Association out with mortgage applications data. And we'll also get the International Trade in Goods reports, a report on corporate profits, and also a report on farm prices. Today, the Fed will start debating whether or not the Volcker Rule will go away. Amazon, ExxonMobil, Twitter, Walmart all have annual shareholder meetings. Just some of the things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, May the 30th.